Hello, and welcome to this episode of Ask a Physical Therapist. I'm your host, Dr. Tanis Kitchener, and I'm grateful to introduce you to Emily Banks, who has been a longtime patient of mine. We have great conversations in the clinic, and she has some really good insight for all of the patients that come my way, and I'm excited to have her share. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Emily has been in the marketing industry, specifically in the running industry, for a decade. She is an author-to-be, is an athlete herself, specifically with running and skiing, and has had quite a few patient experiences with orthopedic issues that had led her on some journeys that she has learned some lessons and would like to share.
Quite the journey. I consider myself a frequent flyer in your office, so a longtime patient, also a longtime friend.
Does that make you an expert patient?
You know, we'll see. It's a journey, as you said.
Is there anything else that you would like to share about yourself in our intro?
Oh, man. No, I think that about covered it. It was a great intro. I should write that down.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You can play it back later. One of the questions that I want to ask you is, as a patient and an athlete and someone who works in the marketing world, what would you like to initially share with our listeners?
Yeah, totally. I think something I see a lot in run and sport media generally is this very like beautiful narrative when it comes to injury recovery as being this, you know, very picture perfect story of, you know, resilience and ending in, you know, coming back stronger, coming back a better athlete at the end. And while these stories are obviously inspiring and helpful and oftentimes true, I think sometimes they fail to really speak and show the grit and the real struggle that exists in that middle part of the story, which is so often where patients and athletes need extra help, extra support, extra solidarity. And so my hope today is to really get into that gritty phase, and hopefully people can walk away with some tangible, you know, things they can do to improve their journey or at least feel a little less alone in the process.
Let's start at the beginning of the journey, like the initial injury, the I don't know what's wrong, I've got to seek help, get a diagnosis, and find some support.
Mm-hmm. How much time you got?
I wish I could show your face right now.
Turning bright red in the studio. Man, where do I start? So my injury journey started when how old was I? I think it was 23. I was like early 2016. I just moved to Carbondale. I was all in on skiing. And I had an accident, tore my MCL meniscus, and it failed to heal to the extent that I think that injury typically would with, you know, conservative PT, and had surgery that was, for lack of a better word, botched, and ended up having to have two more surgeries, so three in total, over the course of about 3 years to finally get back to good health. And spent like a solid year, if not more, of that journey, like really convinced, like, I'm never going to run again, never going to ski again. I will be lucky to walk and be like able to grocery shop like a normal person. And was able to navigate that journey largely through, like, I had a really great support network, thank goodness, and really like went all in on mental therapy. Like, I really like relied on my therapist to get through that, like, bless her. And also my own research. Frankly, I think what was really hard about it is I saw upwards of like six orthopedists during that process, and no one could figure out, you know, why the surgeries weren't working, why my pain wasn't going away, like what was wrong with me. And I was 23. I had no idea how to navigate the real world, let alone the medical world. And so I had to learn how to do my own research. I had to learn how to self-advocate in spaces where I felt really uncomfortable, that were, you know, heightened emotionally. And hard lesson to learn, made a lot of failures, you know, did a lot of things wrong, but ultimately came out of that where I learned a lot. And I try to like now give back and help people who are going through their own medical journeys advocate similarly so they don't go down those same pitfalls.
That's a lot to deal with. I'm glad, one, that you brought up the mental therapy, and we'll get into that shortly. But also something that you and I have talked about behind the scenes is the power dynamic in a medical industry. So particularly in orthopedics, it's usually male dominated. And so you're a 20-something year old female dealing with older male orthopedics. Is that generally your experience?
100%. Yeah.
Do you feel like that had an impact on how you were perceived or your care or how you perceived the person that was working with you?
Yeah, for sure. you know, I feel like I read a study, and I forgot exactly where the study was, but I want to say it was University of Maryland, which has a pain specific research clinic. And I'm pretty sure it was in a study in like 2016 or somewhere around there that talked about how men and women are treated differently in medicine, and how women more often than not, when they come in, you know, presenting with the same injury, will be prescribed a, you know, an anti-anxiety medication as opposed to a pain medication, whereas a male patient presenting with the same injury will be prescribed the pain medication, and that being indicative of this sense of, you know, the female hysteria, like from mm-hmm. the 50s, still being kind of present in medicine, whether or not we acknowledge it more widely mm-hmm. in medicine. But that was 100% my experience. I felt like every time I went into the doctor, it was, you know, over and over again, you're fine. Have you tried ice? Have you tried Advil? Be patient. You're probably overdoing it in PT. And when you hear that over and over and over again, you internalize that feedback and you're like, okay, this is my fault. I'm here because I did something wrong. Or I'm here, you know, three surgeries deep, not able to walk because of something that is 110% my own fault. And while I think we can and all should learn from the decisions we make throughout our life and throughout like a medical journey, I think it's also a process where we need to have a lot of more grace for ourselves mm-hmm. because we are all trying our best. And a doctor telling you just to try Advil when you have a really serious like surgical problem is horrible. That's a horrible thing, especially when it's a doctor who you're placing your trust on mm-hmm. And who you're trying to like believe and who you want. You want to walk into a doctor's office and genuinely believe that they're there to help you.
Yeah.
And I think they are. But ultimately, like, you are your own advocate. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be able to, like, go to battle in those spaces and be like, no, it's not Advil. It's not mm-hmm. an ice problem. It's not a resting problem. I'm in need of medical attention, and you're going to give it to me. And if you're not, I'm going to go to the next person.
Yeah, absolutely. And my hope for the show is always that it reaches the consumer and the medical providers mm-hmm. as well. And I think you're right. I think most medical providers really have the best intentions. Mm-hmm. We always, no matter what industry, and we have to look at our own bias mm-hmm. and how whatever system we're working in puts some limitations on us and how we can maybe do the best we can in that space. And we all have some room for improvement there. But as far as the patient perspective, what have you learned in the meantime that allows you to address that differently, that mm-hmm. maybe allows you to be heard better or heard differently or just internally supported better?
Yeah, no, great question. I think something I've learned about myself is that when I'm in the doctor's office, it's a kind of an emotionally heightened spot, right? Like there's a lot of emotion. I get uncomfortable. I get red in the face. And I find it a lot harder to advocate in an in-person environment like that. And also, when you're thinking about a doctor's visit, you know, typically with an orthopedist, you get, what, 5, 10, 15 minutes with them? It's really quick. And so if you don't get, you know, every question in, they're gone. And so how I've kind of tried to adapt to those two things is getting more in writing before and after my appointments. So if I am going in and, you know, I have X, Y, and Z symptoms and I, you know, have questions about it, I write those all out beforehand and I put them in my phone so I have them to look at in my appointment. And I typically, if I've worked with this doctor and their team before, I'll send it beforehand too. Like, mm-hmm. hey, like, excited to see you guys. Here's what I'd love to talk about today. And if I'm feeling particularly, I guess aggressive isn't the right word, but I'm going to use it. If I'm feeling particularly aggressive, I'll send like a post-appointment email. Like, mm-hmm. hey, like, so great to see you guys today. Thanks so much. Here are the notes I took. Like, does this sound like, you know, are we aligned? Because I have had so many instances where a doctor in an appointment has told me, hey, like, in 3 weeks, you can, you know, return to running. And then when it comes down to getting it in writing, it's actually closer to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I want to have it in writing for any like legal purposes. Like I would never even think to do that, but it's just so that I feel 110% comfortable that I have it in writing. I can talk to my PT about it. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, reference research like in medical journals, whatever, to make sure that I feel comfortable with that prognosis and can move forward comfortably.
That's excellent advice. And the fact that it has you reflect before you even go into your appointment. So not only do you have something in writing so you don't forget, they have time to prepare for your questions. you've had time to reflect. So you go in with the proper questions. And then the provider who's spending those quick 5 minutes with you has time to reflect afterwards. Mm-hmm. I try to get as much reflection in during the appointment, but I can't tell you how many times I sit down to finish my note later and go, oh, yeah, I want to do this next time, or I didn't say this time. I'm going to shoot them an email and just let them know. So it's probably actually helpful from both perspectives. And it's always helpful for me as PT if you're like, here's the exact email I received from them.
Right.
Because it's straight from their mouth. There's no filter on it. Because as humans, we interpret everything from a filter and we regurgitate it through a different filter. And I would just say that if it's difficult to reach your provider via email, you can still write it down on a piece of paper, take it in, write some notes, and at the end say, okay, I just want to read these quick bullet points and make sure I'm understanding properly. And even if you're pretty sure you understood it, it gives them a chance to hear their words back. Anything else on that regard as far as communication with physicians before we move on to more of the interpersonal stuff?
I guess I'll end by saying that you, as the patient, are the number one expert in your own body. And if you genuinely feel in your gut that something isn't right or that you're not being listened to or that you want a second opinion, like, trust that feeling, because, you know, again, the doctors are trying to help you, but they aren't in your body. They don't necessarily know. So trust yourself, believe in yourself. You deserve to be pain-free. You deserve to get help, and you are entitled to ask for it.
Boom. Show's over.
Mic drop.
Just kidding. True. And we've had that discussion over and over. And I think a lot of people have to remind themselves that of even in personal life.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, listen, you know your body better than anybody. I don't care if they have a medical degree. Listen to them, take in their information, because they might have a lot of wisdom for you. So listen openly. But at the end of the day, you know it better. Let's get into the difficulties of being an athlete that no longer can do their sport to the full extent they used to, and what that means when you're not only a competitive athlete, but a social athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So what did that mean to you when you were no longer able to do those things? How did it shape your friendships, your mental health, things beyond just the physical pain?
Well, at 23, it kind of dropped me pretty close to rock bottom, I will not lie. But, you know, rock bottom is where you can build yourself back up in, I think, a better way. That's how I try to look at it, at least. But it definitely, it's hard, right? I think it's really important as athletes, whether it's if you're a professional athlete, an amateur athlete, social athlete, any type of active person, to develop our identities apart from sport. We can't be athletes 100% of the time, even if we all kind of want to be, especially in a place like Carbondale and Aspen. But we have to have more going on. We have to be able to build up those hobbies. We have to be able to find passions that exist outside of sport. And, you know, I won't lie, like, nothing is quite going to scratch the itch like a long run in the mountains. Like, mm-hmm. I feel that deeply. But, you know, we have to be able to find things that bring us joy. And for me, my journey was really about, like, taking a beat and being like, okay, like, if the reality were to exist where I could never move my body like I want to again, which is a hypothetical that I have thought about a lot in the last 10 years, what would my life look like? Like, where could I find meaning? And for me, it's writing. I was super injured last summer and I wrote a book, which is wild to say out loud. But it was such a fun thing to have that was mine. And no matter how healthy or unhealthy my body is, like, I will always have that. And I think it's really important to find something like that for yourself, whether it's knitting or learning to cook or doing something that's like totally different that uses your brain and body in different ways, and, you know, sharing that with your community, because you can do that with friends, you can do that with family, you can connect with people over those things, even if it's feels uncomfy at first or something totally new.
I loved when you were like going through the process of writing your book. Yes, this is awesome. And very few people do stuff like that. It was awesome. I'm excited to read it someday. The other thing that I want to say is I can't tell you how many patients I have at every age, but it seems particularly challenging in the early to mid-20s when they get injured and they're like, none of my friends are coming around because they're all out crushing in the mountains. And if I'm not out there with them, then they don't really have time for me, or they don't realize that it's so important that I'm so lonely. And so it's this opportunity/challenge pain point to re-identify, and it extends beyond just your own hobbies. It extends into personal relationships. I see that as a challenge a lot, and I just want to say, if you're there, it's super common. Hang tight. You'll find the friends that are around, and you'll find ways to identify with them. But if you have any advice on communicating with friends during that time.
Yeah. Yeah. The social aspect is really hard. I mean, I'm now 30, and it's something I still find myself dwelling on probably more than I should. I had a really lovely therapist give this analogy that I found to be helpful, so I can share that, which is she suggested thinking about the friendships in your life as existing on different shelves. And you have, you know, your true north, like best friends, like will be in your life always up top, and all the way down to like maybe acquaintances that you, you know, enjoy, but don't necessarily see as often. And how it can be more fluid in your life than you would think it is. You know, you can prioritize and move people around on these shelves based on like how your life is looking, the same way that their life might be changing. So if you're injured, you might be elevating people who maybe aren't as active in the mountains. And similarly, they can move you around on their shelves as well. It can hurt, it can be sticky, but I think recognizing that life fluctuates in that way, and it doesn't have to be this like scary negative, like we're not friends anymore, has helped me. But it hurts, you know, it definitely, it's sad, you know, when you don't see people you love as often as you want to, that never feels good. And I also think expressing that is a really good thing to do. Like if you miss your people or you want to see them more, you tell them, tell them you love them, tell them you miss them. Like, I think that's really hard to do, but it doesn't have to be confrontational. It doesn't have to be like you're not spending enough time on me. It can genuinely be like, I miss you, I love you, let's spend more time together. Yeah. And I think people always really respond well to that.
So I'd like to circle back a little bit to the mental health aspect. And I try to include that into my sessions with folks. One is recognizing where their nervous system is that day when they come in. Because as a PT, we're often, like, honestly, in school, I was taught to treat muscles, joints, bones. And we'd learn neuro-PT, but it was based on neurodiagnoses like Parkinson's, MS, things of that nature. But what I've learned that's helped me a ton is that I'm always treating somebody's nervous system when they're in their clinic, at least recognizing where it is. If it's well stabilized and it's in a good balance, great, we can go right for the joint. But what controls the muscles, what controls the joint, what controls the pain experience, what controls their motivation, their ability to comply with their home exercise program I've given them, their ability to comply with their rest directions I've given them. So really, I'm always trying to assess where their nervous system is at and how we can tap in to get it to be the best balanced. And so in my sessions, I will sometimes do guided meditation. Have I done that with you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's the best.
So one of my favorite ones is, and I wish I could share this publicly, but it's a pre-recorded one. I didn't do it. I found it somewhere else. I loved it. And it's like a membership on yogadownload.com, but shameless plug for them. I have no association with them. But it's kind of like a body scan where you think about each body part. And a lot of people are familiar with that, where they might focus or tense like their toes and then their feet and then their ankles and their calf and work their way up. But instead of just doing that, you say or you think, I love my toes. I love my toenails. I love my feet. I love my calves, all the way up the body, including genitals, organs, like it names bladder, spleen, all these things. And then it goes beyond that. And then it's, I have enough love for, you know, blah, blah, blah. But when I first listened to it, I thought, oh, this is so cheesy. And then within like 30 seconds, I went, oh, this is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Because how often do we express gratitude for our body? It's generally like everything's great. We don't think about it. And then something's injured or isn't working right or hurts. And then it's like, oh, my freaking knee is hurting again. You know, it never stops. Why is it still giving me trouble? And so to shift that mindset to gratitude and intentionally in each body part, I found was a really great way to drop into some meditation. But that's just one piece of like the mental health puzzle, right? One is where's your nervous system at? Can we dial it in? Can we access the vagus nerve? Can we do some breathing? Also, two, what's going on in your life? Like, where's your stress level at? How do we adjust it cumulatively? Like, honestly, my exercise prescription might be different. If you're overloaded with your stress and work right now, maybe this we're not dialing up your exercise or your ways that might cause pain, because your pain threshold is going to be different if you're not sleeping well or you're stressed at work. Do you want to add some things into the... before I pass it on to you, sorry.
No, go for it.
I was just speaking with a client this week about some other different types of diagnoses and reflecting on the fact that any major medical change, I feel like, should be an automatic referral to 2 to 3 sessions of counseling that's covered by insurance. I mean, it is obscene to me. We're talking orthopedic, which should be... It changes your lifestyle, right? But we send people for breast cancer treatments without counseling. We send people for Alzheimer's diagnosis and treatment without counseling. That should be automatic referral for individual and family counseling. End of story, period. So if you have the means to do that and you like, don't expect your doctor to refer that to you. They should, but we don't. We're not there yet. Please just seek it out yourself. Recommend it to your friends and family. There is no shame in mental health. And if you go to a counselor and it's not a good fit, go to another one. It's the exact same thing as with a physician. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to you because I know you have more to add.
I think that was the second mic drop of this recording. Could not agree more. Couldn't have said it better myself. But 100%. It's devastating that mental health isn't treated with the same level of importance in medicine as the physical. And I'll just add, like, don't wait until it gets bad and don't wait for it to get dark before you seek help. Start when things are good, honestly. Mm-hmm. Therapy is great. And also therapy, a lot like dating, you have to find the right fit. You have to find the right person. It's a journey, but it's worth it. Find someone that you really trust. And start practicing, develop a bit daily, daily mental health practice. I try to do like 5 minutes of breathing every morning. Mm. That's like my thing. It's not enough, but you know, we're trying. And also journaling. Those are my two that
excellent.
I try to do.
Yeah. Excellent. How do you think that the community can support somebody who's going through an injury? I'm talking friends, family, colleagues, employers.
Ooh. I think let's start with friends, since we've already gotten into that a little bit. I think when I have a friend who's injured or someone in my friend group who's going through an injury, I think the number one thing we can do is just like not forget about them, mm-hmm. like ask them like what they need and then go a step forward and offer that help without them needing to ask for it. So, mm-hmm. and like, there's a really big difference between asking a friend like, hey, what do you need? What can I do? And going, hey, like, you just had surgery, you know, I'm going to be going to the dog park in an hour. Can I grab your dog for you? Or I'm going to the grocery store tonight. Can I get you stuff? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Because that, I think asking for help when you are in the thick of an injury, just out of surgery, or maybe in kind of a dark mental health spot, it can be really hard. Mm-hmm. And I know when I've been in the thick of it in the past, like, I will not go grocery shopping for a week and like subsist on Top Ramen over asking someone mm-hmm. to help me out. And that's never a good thing. You know what I mean? Nutrition is important. So definitely ask for help. And when your friend whose friend is going through it, give that help as much as you can. And
I would just add, because mm-hmm. I'm not as good about this, but I try to remember that it's more than a 2-week journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to do that and it's on your radar when it's initially post-op, but as long as they're still modified in their ability to participate in their regular life, there's still an opportunity to step up a little bit more if you have the bandwidth.
Totally. And if your friend is going through it, maybe it's a chance to pick up, you know, a non-impact activity with them. Maybe mm-hmm. it's a chance for you too to pick up a new hobby and share that with them. I try to invite my injured friends to as many things as I can. It's just don't let them feel forgotten, you know?
Yeah.
Even if they say no, even if they're like not feeling it or they're a little more introverted, a little more sad and they don't come out as often, keep inviting them.
What about employers or colleagues?
Yeah. Well, I have kind of like a hybrid remote situation at work, which I love, which is way more flexible, I think, for being injured, because ultimately I can put my leg up if I need to when I'm working from home. I think it's much harder in the office. So I'd encourage, you know, employers, if you have employees who are going through, you know, a physical injury or any sort of medical journey, just to like keep the line of communication open. Don't make any assumptions about how they're doing, why, you know, they are where they're at in their medical journey. You know, just like keep the line of communication open. If they want to talk to you, make sure you create a safe place for them to do that. And try to be, if you have a work environment that can do this, like allow them to work remote, allow them the space to take a lot of doctor's appointments. Because when you're in the thick of it, like sometimes that's what, a doctor's appointment, two PT visits a week.
It's hard.
It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of time. And so if you're an employer and you have the capacity to allow them to, you know, flex time and take what, you know, the time they need to get healthy, I think that'll really come back around and mm-hmm. create a really strong bond between you and your team and, you know, work out for the better.
And SPTs can only work so many evening hours and, you know, totally. To keep people from having to take time off work. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to be open and vulnerable, because I know it takes that to share the grit in the middle for people to understand that when they're going through it, they're not alone and they're not doing something wrong, because it doesn't look as easy as it does in the media. So mm-hmm. thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks for having me.
Have a lovely evening.
You too.
Thank you for listening to Ask a Physical Therapist at KDNK. Join us live every month or check out past episodes online at kdnk.org or on your preferred podcast platform. Standing down on Main Street across from Mr. Blues, my faded leather jacket, my weathered broken shoes. A chill north wind was blowing, but the spring was coming on. I wanted to myself just how long I had been gone. So I strolled across old Main Street, walked down a flight of stairs, stepped into the hall.